Okay, so welcome for the computer graphics lecture. Today we're going to speak about an algorithm for the rasterization of lines. And I already introduced on Tuesday a few considerations. So what is in fact the problem that we want to solve? So the input for this algorithm is a starting point and an endpoint, and we want to connect these, or we want to rasterize the line connecting the two. And now, since such a line has no real thickness, it's not really clear what is meant by that. So one possible interpretation would be to rasterize all the pixels that are touched by the line. However, that would result in rather thick lines that don't look very good on the screen. And the approximation we want to achieve now, for now, we will come back to another solution in the end, looks like this, that we say we want to have the thinnest connected representation of the line from here to here. So for such a line, that means for every x value, we want to have one particular y value where a pixel is set. Yeah, so this is a rather thin representation. That also means that if we have a 45-degree slope, like this here, we see that the line has is rather thin compared to the length of the line. Only 6 pixels are set for that example. Whereas if we would have a horizontal line, for a shorter distance, also 6 pixels would be used. So the diagonal lines look a bit thinner. But we will see how we can also solve that. Okay, so now let's go to the algorithm. So given is a starting point and an endpoint, and we want to connect these. And for simple slopes of the line, that's quite easy. If we have a 45-degree slope, then we can always just go to the right and to the top and just set these diagonal pixels. If we have a slope like 4/8 or 1/2, it's also simple. We always go once to the east and then northeast, east, northeast, east, northeast. But if we have a not that nice and easy slope, then we have to think about something different. So for now, we will only handle or look at the case that the slope is between 0 and 1. That means we have a slope, so that's the steepest that we will look at. And a slope of 0 just means a horizontal line, and we will look at all slopes in between these two. All other cases can be handled by symmetry. We will also see that how that can easily be done for now. Yeah? But now we really look only at these simple case. And that can be quite easily checked. So x1 is larger than x0, and we look at x values between the start and the endpoint. And the line itself, we can also now generate an equation for that line, and this we can see here. Yeah? Y equals y0 plus the slope x minus x0. So I can also make a little drawing. We have the starting point, x, y, 0, y. We have the endpoint. Due to our constraints, the endpoint must be somewhere here in this region. So we have an endpoint here. This is our line. The slope of this line is obviously delta y over delta x. Yeah. The line equation then for this line is shown here. Okay. Yeah. So that's how this would look like. In all the gray regions, our endpoint is allowed to live. for now. Okay, so how could we compute that? Now, I mean, looking at that pixel, at that pixelized image, that's quite simple. We just iterate over all the x values from x0 to x1, from start to end. And for each of these x values, we compute the corresponding y value. We can do that using that equation from the slide before. Yeah, and then we set the corresponding pixel. Well, that's very simple. So the loop would look like that. We go from x0 to x1. For each of these x values, we compute the corresponding y value here using this equation, and then we set the corresponding pixel. And y is a real number, so we have to round that to a pixel position, and we simply use rounding. Yeah, so we choose the pixel closest to the line. Now that exactly does what we want. For every x, we get one y, so that's the thinnest line approximation, and that's it. Okay, now you might say problem solved, but now here we have still potential to improve that and to make things quite a bit faster. And yeah, just wanted to remind you that this is a kind of algorithm that we want to execute many, many million times per second. Yeah, so it's really very, very important to have that fast. And now, if we look at that a bit closer, yeah, we can simply quickly see that we can improve that by using an incremental algorithm. So if we look at that y value, yeah, we see that if x in the loop is increased by 1, what happens is that here this value is increased by 1, but all the rest is exactly the same in every run of the loop. So what we realize is that the y value here, while we go from left to right, is always incremented by m. Yeah, because this x is incremented by 1, so this value just is incremented by m in every run. Yeah, so we end up with this here. Yeah, so we start at x0, and as long as we are smaller, or x is smaller than x1, we draw the corresponding pixel, and then we increment x by 1 and y by m. So that's essentially also the algorithm that we use for the scanline algorithm to rasterize the lines or the edges of the polygons. Yeah, so we have that simple increment here. Okay, so that's already easier to compute. This is an integer, so an integer increment is very, very simple, but y is still a floating point number. Yeah, so we still need floating point values, and we need this rounding. And now we will see that we can also eliminate this, or at least the fact that we need floating point numbers. So how can we do that? And this is the idea of the Bresenham algorithm. And it is the motivation for that algorithm is based on an implicit equation of the line. So let's again look at this. This is our line equation. Yeah, and with m being the slope of that line. And for this special case that we have a slope less than 1, I already also said so, we only have two cases that we have to differentiate. From every pixel here on the line, for the next pixel, we either go to the east or we have to go to northeast. So we can see that looking at this here, so the slope is less than 1. So in every iteration, x is increased by 1, so we go 1 to the right. And y is increased by a value less than 1. That means with the next rounding operation, either we end up at the same row, at the same y position, yeah, rounded, or we end up one row further up. Yeah. So these are exactly the two possibilities. Yeah? Either this one brings us to the next integer y, or it doesn't. These are the two possibilities. So either we have to go east or northeast. And so maybe we can differentiate these, and this is essentially what resulted in an algorithm that we see here. We go from x0 to x1, we draw that pixel, and then depending on some condition, we decide whether we also increase y by 1, whether we go northeast or east. And yeah, this decision can be met using an implicit representation of the line. And yeah, this implicit function, yeah, is for the case of a line, is very simple. So the formula for a line looks like that. So that's exactly the formula that for a particular x tells us the corresponding y. Yeah? So y equals blah, blah, blah. Now, for an implicit function, briefly describe the idea of an implicit function. An implicit function of that line is a function that is a function on x and y. So this is two-dimensional now. And this function is zero exactly for all the points on this line. Yeah, it's a kind of different way to describe such a line. This is explicit. Here we directly get for every x, we get a y. And an implicit function is just a function that says, if you are on a line, then I'm zero. Otherwise, I'm not. And it's very simple for the line case to transform this representation to an implicit function. We simply say y, or other way around, y0 plus m x minus x0 minus y equals 0. Yeah, so that's just a transformation of that equation. And now you see, if we take this as implicit function, we have an implicit representation of the line. I mean, for a line, this is almost ridiculous. It's exactly the same, but there are other cases where implicit functions make perfect sense. Yeah? So this is this implicit representation. And now, according to that construction, we can also see more. And that's for, depending on the order, which we subtract from which, we can see that for all points above the line, our implicit function is larger than 0. And for all points below the line, it's less than 0. And yeah, this simple fact now we can use for our decider. So if you look at that picture, so let's assume this is our current point. And now for the next x, so for this column, we want to decide whether we want to set this point or set this point, yeah, whether we want to go east or northeast. And to do so, what we can do is that we just take the position in between, that's x plus 1, y plus 1 half, and now we check whether this point is below the line or above the line. Yeah? So if we have this case, yeah, if the next point here, the next midpoint, is below the line, then we go northeast. And otherwise, if it's above the line, we go east. Yeah, because now this pixel is closer to the line. And here, the northeast pixel is closer to the line. Yeah, so that's really simple. So for this decider, whether to go north or northeast, we need to know the value of the implicit function at this position here, at position x plus 1, y plus 1 half. It's our implicit function is exactly 0 on the line if it's larger than 0 if it's above, and smaller than 0 if it's below. So we need just the value of this implicit function at this next midpoint. Again, I mean, the slide is redundant. So our decider could look like this. If implicit function at x plus 1, y plus 0.5 is smaller than 0, then increase y by 1. Yeah? So you see our loop gets very simple. But okay, we haven't won much because now we shifted all the work to the evaluation of that function f. Yeah, and this function f still requires multiplication and stuff like that. But we will see that we can further improve that. Yeah. Okay, so we somehow will see that we can make this faster, the evaluation of the of these f, yeah, of these f values here. And now the key will also, or there are two simple ideas that can make this very fast. So the first one, we can compute these f values incrementally, like we did for the y values, just by adding m. Yeah, we can now do the same trick for f. And another observation is that this f here, this implicit function, can be, we go back to that slide, you see that we can multiply f with any positive number without losing the property that it's an implicit description. So if we multiply that by any factor, points on the line still remain zero. Zero times any value is zero. Values that are positive remain positive, and those that are negative remain negative. Yeah, so that we can multiply with an arbitrary number, and this will help us. We will see that we can find a value for a representation of f that is always an integer value at the positions we are interested in. And then we can switch from floating point to complete integer description. And these essentially are the two core ideas. So first of all, we can take f and multiply that by an appropriate value. And to see that value, we replace m by delta y over delta x. And now you see, if we multiply that with delta x, which is positive because we are always drawing from left to right, yeah, we get an implicit function that looks like this here. And this only has integers, yeah, xy, x0, y0, y1, these are integer coordinates of the line. X is an integer coordinate. And yeah, okay, y, the pixel centers are integer coordinates, but we will, as we saw, we want to evaluate at y plus 0.5. Yeah? So y is not really an integer, but it will become an integer by multiplying with 2. So we will apply that trick for a further time, and we'll multiply the entire thing with 2, and then here we have 2y, and then this also is an integer. Okay, but first, yeah, we get rid of this denominator of m here by multiplying with delta x, and then we have this implicit function. Yeah, or here we see it again, so it's a rather simple implicit function. So the first value, So that simplifies this implicit function a bit. And now the next trick is that we see that we can compute this f value here incrementally. That means we can, in the loop, yeah, we always remember the value of f at the current pixel, and if we go to the next pixel, so if we go east or northeast, yeah, we update the value of f incrementally, and we will see that this becomes a simple addition, so that becomes very simple. So when starting the loop, of course, we need the first value. We need to evaluate that. Yeah, but yeah. So we need to evaluate that. That's what happens here. And then within the loop, yeah, we have now two cases. Yeah. So we are we go northeast or we go east. Yeah. So let's first start with a more complicated part, where let's say now we go from. So x0 is not the starting point. It's just the current point. Yeah. Okay. This 0 should better be removed. Yeah, so we go from xy to x plus 1, y plus 1. So we go northeast. And so the next test now will be at x plus 2, y plus 1, plus 1 half. Yeah? So this is always the position where we want to evaluate for our decider. So if we increment x and y, we get this here, x plus 2, y plus 3 over 2. And if we plug this into our formula, yeah, we see that this increment by 1 and this increment by 1 all together result in this increment. So the implicit function increases by delta y, or in fact that's minus delta y, plus delta x. So for the case that we go northeast, yeah, our implicit function increases by that value. That's very simple. Yeah? So we can update our decider variable simply by that term. And if you look at that, this is constant for the entire line. So we don't have to compute that in the loop. We can compute that once outside the loop and then simply do this increment. Yeah? So we end up in that case with a simple addition. And this, if we will see that later, yeah, we can achieve that this is an integer addition. So we have pure integer operation. So the other case, the simpler case, we only go to the right, we only go east. So then simply x is increased. So the next test will be at this position. And if we plug this in here, we will see that the new decider value is just the old decider value plus delta y or minus delta y. Yeah? It's just minus because it's the other way around. Okay, so this brings us to this algorithm here. We start, the starting value of our decider is computed using the implicit function. So that's outside the loop, so that doesn't matter. And then we set the pixel. Oh, sorry, that should be moved to the left. That's a bit screwed up. And then we look at the decider. If the decider is less than 0, we go northeast. That means we increase y, and we increase d by this constant offset. Yeah? So that's the offset for going northeast. And otherwise, if we decide to go east, we increment by this here. And now we can move this computation out of the loop and this computation out of the loop. And this will make things easier. And if we look at that formula, we will see that multiplying f with a 2, we also get an integer value here. Yeah, so we start with an integer value for d, and all these increments are also integer values, so we can switch from float to integer. Yeah, and instead of using a float here, we can use an integer. And yeah, this brings us now to this algorithm, which is now probably surely the most simple way that can be used. So we start at the starting point. We compute delta x and delta y. This here is the first value of our implicit function. If we plug in the starting values, we see that this very simple term here comes out, delta x minus 2 delta 1. Then we pull out of the loop the computation of that offset and of that offset. So we call that the delta if we go east, and this is the delta if we go northeast. Yeah, so the 2 comes because we multiplied our implicit function with 2. And then what remains is the following. As long as we are not at the end, we draw a pixel, we increment x, and then we look at d. If d is smaller than 0, we increment y, and we update d with this term, and otherwise we update d with this term. Yeah? And everything is integer here. We have to update x at some point. We have to update y at some point, and the rest is very simple. Yeah, we have the if clause here is necessary because we either can go northeast or east, and all the update that is necessary is a simple addition, integer addition. That's probably the easiest operation that one can imagine. Okay, yeah, so very, very simple algorithm, can easily be implemented in hardware. Yeah, so with very little circuits and transistors, it's possible to implement that method here. Okay, now this is, now we still have to consider that we have strong assumptions on the range where this line is drawn. So we have slopes between 0 and 1 only and stuff like that. So the test whether we are in the right segment is quite simple. But of course, we want to have a general method, yeah, to draw lines from a particular point to any other point. And now we have to kind of using symmetry, leading all this back to this basic algorithm here. And now here are the 8 different cases, essentially, that we have to consider. This is the area, the octant that we were living in right now. So imagine here is the starting point, and these are possible positions of the endpoint. So if the endpoint is somewhere here, we can use the algorithm we just used. And all the other cases now, we can use similarity to find similar algorithms. And now we look at a few different cases. So the first one, we look at the case that the slope is negative, yeah, so that we take this region instead of this region. And here we see that this case is quite easy to handle. We just take, instead of going differentiating between east and northeast, we go east and southeast. Yeah? And instead of having a negative delta y, yeah, we simply take the absolute value of delta y, and this automatically leads us downwards. All these tests, yeah, can remain the same. Just the only difference, the northeast case means that instead of going to x plus y plus 1, we go to x plus y minus 1. And if we plug in all these tests, we will see that exactly the same algorithm comes out. Okay, so this helps us with this case and with this case, simple if part. And now the next part is what if the slope is larger than 1? So that means if we are in this region, for instance. So we can handle that by simply swapping x and y. Yeah. This gives us, this essentially means mirroring here along the diagonal, and then this case is mapped to this case. So in that case, we swap coordinates. So this helps us. So now we have all these 4 cases on the right. Yeah, this one is mapped to this one, this one is mapped to this one, and this one has been mapped to this one. And now we have to look at these cases. These are the cases where the starting point is left. The end point is on the left of the right point. And we can simply handle that case by changing starting and end point. Yeah? That's the most simple thing, because drawing a line from start to end should be the same like drawing the line from end to start. So all these 4 cases on the left can be handled by that. Yeah? So if x0 larger than x1, then swap start and end points. Okay, yeah, and if the slope is negative, that's now a kind of summary, yeah, what we should do. If the slope is larger than 1, swap coordinates, swap x and y, do the algorithm, but then when drawing the pixels, you have to swap again. If this is the case, swap start and end point. If the slope is smaller than 0, then the step size in y should just be minus 1, and the rest works fine if we always take the absolute value of the difference in y. That's all. Yeah? Okay. So, also these symmetry cases can be handled quite easy, so it's a rather simple piece of code that is left. And that also works for the general case. Okay, now we still have the problem that, as I said before, a diagonal line will be thinner than a horizontal line. Yeah, just because for this line, we set exactly as many pixels as we do for this line. Yeah, just because it has the same extent in x direction, the delta x is the same. Yeah, so we have the same number of lines, pixels, but this line here is the square root of 2 longer, by a factor of square root of 2. So this line appears thinner. More general, we can say that that for such a line here, the number of pixels that are set is delta x, is always delta x, but the length of this line here is the slope times delta x, or cosine alpha times delta x. Yeah? Cosine alpha is, no, it's not the slope. that's wrong. This must be the tangens, right? Or cotangens. Okay, so maybe that, I have to think about that. But for now, I would say it's wrong. No, it's not wrong. Sorry. L is the length of the line. The number of pixels that are set is delta x. Yeah, and delta x is the cosine of alpha times this, because this is, that's correct. It's the formula is the other way around. So if we have a line of length L, the number of pixels that are set is only delta x, and that's L times cosine alpha. Yeah, so the larger alpha gets, the less pixel are set. And this results exactly to this effect. Yeah, a horizontal line has one pixel per unit length, and for a diagonal line, we only have 1 over square root of 2 pixels per unit length. So that's something like 0.7. Yeah, so we have less pixels per unit length. Okay, now how could we compensate that? So one simple method would be that if we have a grayscale monitor, we can compensate that by saying, okay, this is the reference, and the fact that we set kind of too many pixels for this line, we compensate by simply making these pixels not perfectly black, but a bit more grayish. Yeah, so we scale the intensity with this factor, so that would make these horizontal lines more grayish, and then they look as bright or as thin as these. Yeah. Okay. So that would be one solution, but of course it better should be the other way around, that this gets darker and this kind of is the reference, because it's a one pixel wide line and this is probably what you expect, and we should kind of make these a bit darker. But since we already have maximum darkness or intensity, we should find another solution, and a typical solution for that is what we call anti-aliasing of lights. Now, we already spoke about aliasing, and in that context, aliasing simply for lines means these staircase effects that you get, that a rasterized line, only consists of pixels. Yeah, and instead of a continuous line, you see a staircase. Yeah, you see stairs. And a simple way, as here. And a simple way to remove that, or what we typically call anti-aliasing, now is to make these steps less visible by using pixels, or by also setting nearby pixels and using grayscale values. So that would be an example. So here, for instance, you see, if we imagine here is that line, that this pixel is very close, or the decision was very close whether to go east or northeast. So the line essentially touches both these pixels. Yeah, so we had a binary decision in our algorithm, so we decided to set this pixel, but it was a very close decision, and almost this one here was set. So one way to account for that would be to set the color of both of these pixels, yeah, and to set them to a gray value. Now the line is kind of smeared between the two pixels, but in the result, now of course in this large magnification, it looks a bit weird, but on a screen where pixels are small, this line looks much smoother and much nicer than this one here. Yeah? And these staircase artifacts here are much less visible than they are here. So it's quite desirable to have such an image. And now the question is, how can we extend that? And by the way, we can also solve that intensity problem here, because now we can make a single part here darker because we set two pixels. Yeah? Okay, and how can we solve that? Now the Bresenheim algorithm has the nice property that in our decision variable, we have the implicit value of that function for the next midpoint. And this decision value is directly the distance from that next midpoint to the line here in that column. Yeah? That's exactly the definition how this implicit function here has been defined. Yeah, it's just the distance of the line, or of our point to the line. And this A here, or the value of our decision variable D, is exactly that difference, but it's multiplied by 2 times delta x. We did that to get rid of load and to use integer instead. So if we divide d by this value, we exactly get this distance. And of course, this a now is a very good way to decide how we distribute the intensity of our line between these two pixels. Yeah. So in that case, for instance, most of the color should go to this pixel and only little color to here. And if the line really goes through here, so if R is 0, then we would equally distribute intensity between these two pixels, for instance. And if it's below here, we should give more intensity to this and less to this. Yeah, and we can directly derive the weights from our decision variable. So here are now the possible cases that we have to consider. So if we look at the case that we go to the east, yeah, then we have two possibilities. Either the line passes this pixel in the upper half, yeah. So this is the center of this east pixel. And now if the line passes in the upper half, that means this distance is smaller. This distance is less than 0.5. Yeah, then we distribute between this pixel and this pixel. And if the line passes below here, this means this distance is larger than 0.5. Then we distribute between this and this. And the intensity factor we directly derive from this distance. Yeah, so that's a simple formula that makes a linear blend. Yeah. How much we distribute between these two. And for the case that we go northeast, we can make a similar consideration. So if R is larger than minus 0.5, then we distribute between east and northeast, and otherwise we distribute between northeast and north-northeast. Yeah? And again, the weights are simply derived from A. Okay, yeah, so that's a rather simple way to do that, and the Bresenheim algorithm delivers us the information how far is the line away and how should we distribute values to get a nice anti-aliased version of our line. Okay, so just to complete that a bit, I would like to show that the very same idea that has been used for lines here in the Bresenheim algorithm also works for other geometry. I mean, it doesn't work for everything, but for which it also works nicely is for circles. And here it also is maybe Yeah, okay. And now we do exactly the same, yeah? And we will see that almost the same algorithm works here, but just the formula, the increments are a bit different. Again, we start with a kind of implicit formula, or we first describe points on a circle that is centered at xc and yc and has radius r. We can describe all points on the circle using this formula here. Yeah? That's also a kind of implicit equation for points on the circle. And for now, we make two assumptions. We say that the circle is centered at the origin. Yeah, so that's just a simple offset. So that's simply easy to correct. And again, we use symmetry. That means we divide, as we did for the Bresenham, we divide our circle into 8 octants. Yeah, that's exactly the same octants that we had before. And should draw an image for that. So these are the 8 octants. This is our circle. And now we only look at this part of the circle. And we compute the pixels for this part. And whenever we compute a pixel here, we set this pixel in the corresponding positions in the other octants. No, that's too many. Yeah. 8. Yeah, so if we draw this part here, this arc, in the end we get the entire circle. Yeah, but we only look at this part. And here again, we can go through x stepwise, one by one. Here we now have the slope where we are at the diagonal. So from here on, this going through here stepwise would result in an open curve. So that would be not closed anymore. But we can use symmetry to do that. But here we get a closed curve. And in particular, for every pixel, again, we only have two possibilities, either go east or southeast in this case. Yeah, so now we have the same setup as for lines, but of course the way that the decision variable to decide between east and southeast must be different. Okay, so that should show if we decide about a particular pixel here, to set that with that method, we immediately set that at 8 positions. Yeah? So that's using this 8-fold symmetry. And yeah, now the interesting part, now we have to look at this new implicit function. Oh, sorry, there's something I forgot here. The new implicit function, this looks like this now. This is a square function. It has here this square term. But otherwise, it's exactly the same like for the lines. We have, if it's positive, then we are above. If it's negative, then we are below. And now we can apply the same machinery. Again, we look at the decider variable at the next midpoint. Now we have to go downwards. That's why we have minus 1/2 here, because the curve goes downwards. And if this increment or this value here is positive, then we go southeast, and otherwise we go east. And now the interesting thing is, if we look at an incremental computation of d, we will see that it's a bit more complicated, because if we go southeast, no, that's east, then the decider variable is incremented by 2x plus 3, and otherwise it's incremented by this value. And now, unfortunately, this increment depends on x. Yeah? Now this increment changes with the position where we are. So here we have another increment than here and then here. For the line it was constant, so we could compute it outside the loop. And it was very simple. Now we have this a little bit more complicated increment. But the nice thing is that if we look at the increment of the increment, this is constant. So we can compute this increment incrementally. Yeah? I mean, in order, that's just the second derivative what we compute here. Yeah? So we see that this value here, 2x plus 3, and this here, yeah, If we increase x by 1, then this increment increases by 2. And if we increase x by 1 and y by minus 1, then all this here increases by 4. So yeah, we do it in this way incrementally. So this is the increment when going east, this is the increment when going southeast, and when going east, the east increment is incremented by this, and the southeast increment is incremented by this. And if we go southeast, then this happens. Yeah? And putting all this into an algorithm, we can also see that by properly choosing values, this is a pure integer function. Yeah, then we end up with this algorithm, which is also very simple. It's like the Bresenham for lines. So we have starting values for, or d is our decider value. These are our increment values. Yeah, and they are applied as we did before. If d is less than 0, we increment d. And otherwise, we increment d by this other increment. But now the increments are adapted. E is adapted and SE is adapted here. And here E is adapted and SE, you see that's very, very simple operations, yeah? And then X needs to be incremented, and in this case Y is incremented, and that's it. Yeah? And that gives us a circle. Maybe it's surprising. I mean, looking at that algorithm, you would never find out that it draws a circle. But I hope you understood why it draws a circle. And essentially, that's the last thing that I wanted to show today. And next week, on Tuesday, we will then look at geometric transformations. And we will learn how we can generate perspective and stuff like that. OK, thanks a lot. See you next week.